welcome back to the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon with you, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. I am very excited because I will be talking to a xylophonist. No, that's not something filthy. Can you name anybody, by the way, who plays the xylophone in this day and age? Well, I can, and he's one of the best in America, one of the best in the world. His name is Ian Finkel, unusual name. The second name may be familiar to you because you have seen his father on stage, on TV, in picket fences, on Broadway and Cafe Crown, in Yiddish theater 60, 70 years ago. I'm talking about the son of Feivish Finkel, Ian Finkel. He is a musician. He is a novelist. He is with us in the neighborhood today. Hello, shalom to you, Ian.
Hello, and how are you? You got it partially correct.
Oi, what did I get wrong?
You said, what did you say? I'm one of the best.
Oi, forgive me. Did the best one just die? I don't know. How many xylophonists are there out there?
How many can you name?
And there you go. But here's the question. Is it xylophonist or xylophonist?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's like saying flutist or flautist. It doesn't matter. It's all the same.
Every time I say flautist, somebody smacks me, so I don't use that one. But also your name, and I have to say, this is only the second time in my whole life when I've heard the name I-A-N, not pronounced Ian, like Ian Fleming, but Ian, because my good friend Dave, who runs this radio program, he went to Hebrew school 100 years ago, and he had a student in his class whose first name was Ian. And he grew up thinking that was how you pronounce the name, and it always shocked him when other people called themselves Ian. So, how did that happen for you?
I think when my mother named me, it was Ian. But growing up in Brooklyn, when they saw I-A-N, it became Ian.
Huh, because it rhymed with the Jewish word for wine, Yayin? I don't know.
Oh, no, it didn't.
Now, we're going to be talking a little bit about your father, of course, but tell us a little about your mom.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, though, obviously we'll talk about Feivish Finkel, but what about Mrs. Finkel? What is she still alive, and what was she like, etc.?
You mean my mother or my wife?
Well, oh, okay, your mother first, then your wife. Which is the way it should come for a Jewish boy, by the way. Okay, I'm kidding.
I've never corrected a rabbi in my life, so what do you want?
Oh, wait a minute. So was she nearly as old as your father?
She's maybe a year or two older.
My God, so you got good longevity genes, let me tell you.
Oh, let's hope so.
So was she a typical Jewish mamma?
Yeah, you might say that. She probably wanted me to be a lawyer, because I certainly wouldn't want to be a doctor. But yeah, she was a good Jewish mother, absolutely, of course.
Oh, wonderful. And was she there through all the ups and downs of your dad's career?
Oh, naturally, of course. They were inseparable.
Oh, that's... So how long were they married, roughly?
Oh, my goodness. They were married, 60 years.
Oh, mit mazel, mit... And how long are you married, Ian Finkel?
About 178 years.
Feels like it sometimes, doesn't it? I'm telling... And you have little Finkelettes? Finkelsteins, whatever?
My offspring are all grown and they're working. They do what they do.
So wait a minute. Does your father now have great grandchildren at this point?
Yes, my son has a son. So yes, my father would be a great grandfather, right?
Oh, mit mazel, mit glick. So let's roll it really back to the very beginning when you were a kid, and instead of taking up. Well, no, but I guess people didn't take up the guitar back then, but maybe the violin.
Sure, that's what I should have taken up. I took up the xylophone.
Yeah.
Because actually, at a very late age, I was originally a very lousy drummer.
Oh.
Then I switched to trumpet, and I was worse.
Well, you were banging on it, yeah.
Then though the Fulton Fish Market thought I could do well selling fish with the horn. But then, I wasn't quite 19. My music teacher, you know, he had a job set up for me cleaning the toilets at the Astor Hotel.
Ooh.
He had second thoughts. This is true. And he had second thoughts. And he showed me a lot of instruments, and I didn't want to play the piano. My brother was already an accomplished pianist. He's a great concert pianist now. And,
this is Elliot Finkel, right? What's his name?
Elliot. And I failed at brass. I failed at this and that. It was too late to start string instruments. And he showed me the xylophone. And I thought I was very cute on it. And it was a lot of fun. He knew I loved music, and I was a good reader, and, you know, I was onto it. But when I first played the xylophone, I thought, oh, gee, this is a lot of fun, and it will get me girls.
Uh-huh.
But no one said, it's guitar, you idiot. Guitar, not xylophone. But
you bring a guitar to a party, you know, you sit on the couch, I gave my love a cherry, the girls fall over you, you know.
Never fell over me, in fact. When I wheel my xylophone out on stage, I say to the audience, I know, you see this thing, and you hate me already.
And by the way, I will say that I have seen this man on stage backing his dad. When Fivish Finkel does concerts and has been doing them for many years now, it's his son's band, the two sons, Elliot and Ian Finkel, here with us, who are backing the father. So I've seen you, and you are a very lively guy. You don't just disappear into the shadows and bang a couple of things on the xylophone. You're a dervish, kind of.
Well, I mean, I'm an entertainer, you know. I just don't stand there and play. I do what is need to be done for whatever kind of piece of music it is.
Well, I remember you shouting, too. You were going, yeah! Like you were hitting a horse at one point. I thought it was fun.
I never hit a horse in my life, though a couple of horses have hit me. But, you know, do you remember where you saw me play?
It was probably Town Hall. Could have been 10 years ago. I remember it was almost like a New Year's Eve. It was during holiday time because it was snowing outside.
Right, right. Well, yeah, that was a little while ago. Okay, sure.
But you still, I mean, your father still does concerts occasionally. He was at 54 Below, yeah.
He's 92 and he's still working.
Do you tell him not to? I mean, at that age, do you say, Pop, it's time, rest, or not?
There's no such thing as telling any entertainer ever, regardless of age or physical problem, whatever, you know, illness or whatever. Thank God he's fine. But, you never say it's time to retire. There's no such thing, especially comedians. Never retire. I think I met one in my meager 50 years in the business that kind of retired. But basically, that's one out of thousands.
All right, Joan Rivers has been dead 3 weeks. She's still working. It's amazing.
So funny. She was a very funny lady.
Oh, she was wonderful. And so was your dad, of course. And you and your mom went through, I mean, we think of him because he was on TV in the picket fences and he's still very active, and, you know, but it was a renaissance. There were many, many years when he was barely working. Did you notice a change in him when he got Cafe Crown, and then that led to more work and led to TV and the presence that he has now?
No, he's always been the same.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, a good thing. He's always been a saint. He's always good-natured, of course, and very focused on what he has to do, and he still is. And he always kept working, you know, on his art and perfecting it. And, you know, it's show business or music or anything you want to say, 90% of it or more, 99% of it is luck. So you always have to be ready if you get lucky. And he was always ready. And, you know, it happens when it happens. It happened to him a little later in life than normal. But so what? It happened, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Big. And, even when, let's say, in the old days, when he first started, he didn't obviously work the jobs he worked after being on Broadway and television and movies and blah, blah, blah. But he was the same man, generous, saint-like. I mean, yeah, what can I say?
Well, I mean, it's a wonderful way to feel about a father, isn't it? I mean, thank God. He's very lucky, and I will say that we have had the honor of having your father on this program a couple of years ago, and he was an absolute delight to talk to, so. But now we are talking to the son, the offspring, the seedling of Feibrich Finkel. We're talking to Ian Finkel, the xylophonist xylophonist, and also, since we're talking about later life careers and changes and things, the novelist. And it's kind of an interesting thing. You started writing, and then you were just writing mostly for yourself. And what happened?
No, I wasn't really writing for myself. Really, what happened was I've always written, because when I first started, let's say in my early 20s already, you know, xylophone is not exactly an instrument that's used a lot.
True.
Work a lot, you know, so I always wrote a lot of music, a lot of arrangements, and I caught on a little bit, and I was writing for shows and different things, and when you become a so-called orchestrator, an arranger, you also have to have a decent working knowledge of the word. You know, you got to make the words go with the music, sometimes you have to write some lyrics.
Oh.
Fix, you know, so I always wrote. However, I'd say, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I said, well, don't waste this portion of, you're lucky to get what little talent you got. I started writing novels. I have always written comedy routines, I wrote shows, I wrote all kinds of junk, you know, everything you can name, I did. But then I decided to put some time in, not to take away any time from the instrument, but to add time. There's 24 hours in a day. How much can you play the instrument? I practice 5 hours a day.
Involved.
I think after the 5 hours, and then do the show, you know, wherever I'm appearing, then I also write. And I wrote a bunch of novels.
A bunch of novels? How much do you write a day?
A couple hours. I mean, it depends what has to be done. You know, novels, well, everyone is different. Fast doesn't mean good. I mean, I might be considered fast only because I'm used to from being in the music scene. You know, you get an assignment on a Monday night and they want it for Tuesday morning. But so maybe I could write a novel in a handful of months, and some guys take a year.
Wait a minute. You can write a novel in 2-3 weeks?
No, I wouldn't say 2-3 weeks.
Half of a month.
A novel takes more than that. A good novel, I mean, you got to put in a month or two, at least in my case. But yeah, that's pretty fast. I know some guys that have spent a couple of years on a book.
Of course. That's, yes.
If it comes out good, it's good.
Do you outline? Do you plan? Do you gestate for a while before you hit the keyboard?
No. First of all, I don't hit a keyboard. I write with a quill, and I dust it with powder. No, I write it in pen. I have people that are very fortunate. My wife types it up. I also, my publisher, the three novels that I'd like to talk about, they're published in Holland.
Oh.
And this publisher, her name is Denise Notemans, and she has done a lot of typing as well, and I'm lucky in that respect.
And you're incredibly lucky in the sense that you got this publisher, you found a place, because so many people have a novel that they write, they send to a couple of agents, it's rejected, you put it in a drawer, and boom, you're done, and there go your hopes and dreams down the toilet. You were working...
Well, you can't base your hopes and dreams on one book. Let's say you write a book, and you can't get anyone to publish it. First of all, you may not be able to get anyone to even look at that thing. To look at it, you do all the right things, and you send it off to all these literary agents, and that doesn't mean even look at it, even if you do it exactly how it says in those books, and this query, that query, and this chapter, that all that sort of stuff, they still may not look at it. Just to get it looked at is hard before you're even published. I was very fortunate that I met Miss Notemans on a cruise ship. She happened to be a passenger. She saw me writing, and we talked for a minute. She said she's a publisher, and there you go.
Incredible. And that's what you said before. You have to be ready when luck comes along.
Yeah, but let's say I gave her my first novel and she didn't like it. That don't mean that's the end of it. Then you got to write another one. It's like music. You play a piece. Maybe you don't play it so good, or maybe you don't even like the piece. Who knows? Whatever. That don't mean that's it. You're basing your career on one piece. You got to write it and play another piece.
So you've had three published novels to this point, right? And now for people who might think, oh, well, okay, he's the son of Ivish Finkel, and they're Jewish, and this.
It has nothing to do with my novels whatsoever.
No.
In fact, I wouldn't even let my father read my novels.
That's what I was alluding to. Apparently they're kind of racy in a way.
Well, you might say they're a little bit.
One of them is called Sex Stories My Wife Told Me.
But look, my novels are based on the truth.
Uh-oh.
My novels are based on what people have told me, people I've interviewed, people I've known. What I write about really exists. If you read one of my novels, let's say, and you say, oh, that's impossible. Oh, please. You're wrong, because there are people like this. In fact, these are good people I write about. You look at all the Meshuggahs around the world, you know, Meshuggahim around the world. What I write about is not 1/100th as bad as what a lot of people do.
But do you feel a little weird, like when you write a scene that's racy or naughty or sexy, and then you have to show it to a wife, to a partner, you know, to another person?
Oh, not if they're an adult, a professional, of course. Someone who is a professional or someone who has an open mind reads the book. First of all, it's not about content. It's about is it well written? That's number one.
Okay.
And hopefully my books are well written, one would hope. Okay, fine. Now, you may not like the topic. It's just like there are people that eat rabbits. I don't like rabbits. I wouldn't eat a rabbit. You couldn't pay me to eat a rabbit.
They're not bad, actually, but okay. Yeah.
Right. So if a guy wrote a book about rabbits, I don't judge it. Oh, I'm not reading that. I hate rabbits. I would never eat a rabbit. But it might be a well-written book.
True. So what genre? Is it thriller? Is it psychological mystery? If you had to put yourself in a particular genre, what would it be?
Well, each book's a little different. The first book, which is called Three is the Charm.
Uh-huh.
Is about three hookers in the meatpacking district.
Get out.
In 1956. And it's a love story.
Of course.
It surely is. And they're...
Well, they're packing meat, yes.
Well, they're not packing meat. There's three guys. There's other characters. I mean, I can't describe the 20 different characters in the book. But they're people like this. The second book... Sex Stories My Wife Told Me.
Oh, yes.
Not my wife, not your wife. This is the guy in the book's wife.
I realize.
He's a postman, you see. His wife is kind of like a nice lady, I don't want to use that term, I use a girl next door type.
Okay.
All of a sudden, she starts writing very filthy, dirty stories, and it turns out that she is possessed by an ex. I shouldn't say ex. He was a pornographer who committed suicide in the house before they bought it. See?
It's like a sex debut. Yeah.
A horrible person, obviously. And he was pro-Nazi and pro-this and pro-that, you know. And okay, that's the second book. Then the third book, which I'd say anybody could read it. It's it's called Transmutation Blues. And that's about people changing their jobs in midlife.
So
like a bouncer winds up selling cards in a card shop, a model
exactly happened to me. Yes, okay.
None, you should excuse me.
Yes. Oh, pardon you. So, but are those short stories collected, or is that it's still a novel?
Two books. Three is The Charm, and Sex Stories My Wife Told Me are both full novels. The Transportation Blues is a collection of short stories.
And they are all by our guest in the neighborhood, Ian Finkel. And by the way, you can find out more about these books and order them, as well as a couple of his CDs, at his website, ianfinkel.com. And remember, that's I-A-N-F-I-N-K-E-L, spelled the way nickel is spelled, kind of. I-A-N-F-I-N-K-E-L.com. We're talking with Ian Finkel. I do want to get back to a bit to...
If you go to More For Many, M-O-R-E, the number four, many, M-A-N-Y.com, that's the website, you know, the publisher's website, and of course all the books would be there.
They would be there too, of course.
But either one is good.
Now going back also to the music, because you have done not just backing up your father and not just having your own concerts, but you have been on Broadway occasionally in the pit. Pit musician, as they call it.
That's 100 years ago.
So what? You don't have any interesting stories when you were in the pit playing for Hello Dolly, the revival of that, or for Damn Yankees, or Michael Feinstein? There must have been some funny things that happened.
Well, I think a funny thing was, looking back, when I did Damn Yankees, which I think must have been the last job I did as a freelance musician, because I always want to be a soloist, but I guess I needed the money at the time. Jerry Lewis became the star of that show.
Right.
And he loved, you know, as many entertainers, you know, they get cranked up before the show when they hear the overture. Well, the first night he ever did the show, he came into the pit, see, and he, everyone was looking at him, ooh, look, it's Jerry, and the conductor put his hands down, and he said, Jerry, welcome to the pit, and Jerry Lewis said, I'm gonna watch every move you make, and I said, you'll be the only one watching him. Now, of course, the whole orchestra laughed. And Jerry Lewis looked at me and said, that's one, and he didn't speak to me
for
3 weeks.
Oh.
But he thought, first of all, I topped him, and second of all, I think he thought I was making fun of his voice. Well,
that's right,
but actually, my voice is not really Jerry Lewis. My voice is a little closer, I don't know if you remember him or not, you might, a man who is a big radio star named Fred Allen. See?
Fred Allen, with all due respect, he had kind of a more upper crusty sort of...
My voice is closer to Fred Allen than Jerry Lewis. Nevertheless, once he found out who I was, then we became friends, and I had to eat with him, and I did his telethon many times.
Oh, okay, so it didn't... Okay, so it thawed out. And it wasn't a bad situation. Actually, I would cross with Fred Allen and Gilbert Gottfried a little bit.
Gilbert Gottfried, yeah, that's good. I met him. He came to see us perform in a show a couple of years ago. You know what? He's a lovely fella.
Okay. Oh, Gilbert, yeah, he's been on the program as well. He's a very charming, believe
lovely
it or not.
Guy.
Yeah, a very Hamish guy, as are you. And it's nice to know that Jerry Lewis, because you hear all sorts of things about that man. So it's kind of nice to know that he had a good side that you saw.
Now, I don't judge people by good or bad sides as far as I judge their entertainment chops, you know? Jerry Lewis, whether you like him or not, was one of the greatest film directors that ever lived. He was a very good comedian. Yes, I've heard all the stories. I of course, have never seen any of that stuff.
Well, you did. I mean, he didn't talk to you for 3 weeks of the show.
All comedians are like that. They're all nuts anyway.
Well, then you have opened for and worked with other comedians. Sounds like a very odd pairing, but the once couple, Emo Phillips and Junie Tenuta, Any thoughts about the stories about them, working with them?
No, not really. I met Judy Tenuta. I was doing a TV show. It was called Love Lab, which was a so-called ladies channel, the Lifetime channel at the time. And it was a show of all lady comedians, and she was one of them. And it was called Love Laughs, starring whoever, featuring Ian Finkel and his all-guy band.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot of fun. You know, Emo, yeah, I did a couple of things with him. I did a New Year's Eve thing. I thought it was funny when he took me and my brother aside and showed us. I mean, it's not like the old comedians that you had to rehearse with for 4 hours. They had so much music. He wanted a little play on music. And he had a little keyboard that I wouldn't give you 38 cents for. He probably picked it up at Sears or something, and he played it for these two big-time so-called keyboard players. He played it, you know, like we should, like, go, oh, wow, you know. It was okay. But he was all right. He was a decent guy. He was okay. She was a little more fun.
Interesting. Okay. Because there used to be a couple 100 years ago, and then there's
still... They were married, I believe, at one time. I don't know if they are not. I haven't worked with many people in many, many years. I'm on my own. I'm a soloist, and I write.
And what you did, where it says in your bio that you have collaborated with Philip Glass.
Well, I wouldn't say it was exactly a collaboration, but one of his concertos that he had written, I was called in to fix it up.
To fix it up? How?
Well, look. I don't put people down.
Okay.
But let's put it between you and me and the 50 million people that are listening in right now.
Oh, yeah.
Beethoven, he ain't. So,
Beethoven,
he ain't. Channel for a guy I know, and it wasn't very good, and it was just his typical vamp till ready stuff, and I was called in, and I had to take it, and I did a lot to it, you know. I fugued it out. I wrote this and that, and, you know, whatever. You know, so I wouldn't exactly say it was a collaboration. I was called in, like, you know, to fix it.
Okay, no, that's. I mean, it reminds us that you play the xylophone, but your arrangements and your music writing isn't just for that instrument. It's for all different.
Well, I've written shows, and I write for full orchestras and all kinds of stuff. Whatever, you know.
What's your proudest accomplishment as a musician?
Oh, I don't think any musician could answer that, because you never really master your instrument. No matter how good you play a recital or a concerto or whatever, you always find fault with it. You're never happy with it. That's if you're good, you know. And even the greats that I've talked with, they'll tell you the same thing. Yeah, I was proud of the way that piece came out, but, you know, I coulda, shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know. They're all like that. I don't think anyone that says, oh, I'm very proud of that record I just did. Oh, please.
Well, let me ask you, though. You still, apparently, you practice your xylophone 5 hours a day. Over the years, there was a point when you're getting better and better. Is there a point when you have to practice 5 hours just to stay where you are, or not decrease as you get older?
Of course. That's any musician will tell you. Any musician that you know, is a real musician, he's going to say after a certain age, a lot of your practicing is maintenance, you see? And that could be actually, even in writing, it's maintenance. In other words, let's say you work a pretty full life on an instrument, and you get pretty good. Okay. But to maintain that, not just stop and say, all right, now I'm great, and I don't... Oh, no. You got to keep practicing just to stay at that level. So a good portion, you're always learning new stuff, hopefully, but a good portion is maintenance. That could even be... If you're an older, you take a guy like my dad. Now, he's a great actor, no question.
it's absolutely the truth, absolutely important. I'm kind of curious. I've always wondered, what is the difference? I guess I could look this up on Wikipedia, but I'd rather ask you. Could you go to a vibraphone and play that? Or are they so different?
In my earlier days, a vibraphone is metal, has a pedal, and, you know, that's the instrument, let's say, that's played by...
Lionel Hampton, let's say.
Lionel Hampton, of course, and many, many others. Gary Burton, Red Norvo eventually played it. What I play is wood. The xylophone is made of wood. It doesn't have a pedal. You got a tremolo on the thing to keep it going.
Do you have to mic it when you're in an orchestra?
Not with an orchestra, if the piece is properly written, but when I do pop music... You know, when I do my act, you know, shows, yes, I am mic'd. There is mics on it because you can play loud with really hard mallets, but the sound is very glassy and brittle. And if you want to get a nicer sound, you use a little bit softer mallet, and it's mic'd, so you're heard, of course, and it's still a good sound.
Well, we have been hearing wonderful, good sounds and good talk from the delightful Ian Finkel. Remember that you can check his website, ianfinkel.com, Finkel, F-I-N-K-E-L. And also, what's the name of the book publishing, More for More, was it?
Penny is the publisher. They have a website, you know, www.moreformany.com.
Moreformany.com. Just one or two more quick questions for Ian Finkel with us here in the day. And besides the music and besides the novel, apparently one of your other great pastimes or your hobbies, I'm not sure what you would call it, proclivities, has to do with smoking cigars. Are you... Okay, it's an addiction, yeah.
I have a bad habit. You might as well do it well. And, I love cigars. Sure, they're wonderful. And I always have one with me as I do this very moment. And, look, it's like anything else. The better as you smoke them and you get a little successful and you buy better ones, you can never go back to the cheaper ones. You get better and better. Yeah, I love them. Sure, they're great.
Now, can you tell the difference between... an American, or wherever the hell cigars are rolled, and the so-called Cuban cigar. I'm sure you've tried one or two.
Oh, sure.
Is there a difference? Are they really that much better?
Well, yes and no. Mm-hmm. Look, there's great Cubans, and then you could spend a lot of money on a box and get a bunch of duds, and they're not so good. You can get wonderful Nicaraguan, Dominican, Honduras. There's all kinds. You know, they're all different. Yes, a Cuban, when it's really great, is really great. There's no question about it. Hmm. But yeah, I've had a few that weren't so great, too. You know, they're not always incredible. They're always expensive, but they're not always incredible. You can get wonderful cigars made elsewhere.
Now, do you ever worry, first of all, because you're a performer and an entertainer and you're not always quiet... that you're gonna get some bad mouth or throat thing, not to mention your lungs, from smoking all these years?
Well, you know, first of all, you don't inhale a cigar. It's not a cigarette.
Okay.
So you don't run quite the risk. Also, I don't quite smoke that much. I have them in my mouth, which is probably not a great thing either, but I have them in my mouth a lot, and it's a funny thing. When you walk down the street... especially when I've been to foreign countries. You know, I'm walking down the street and I got a cigar in my mouth, whether it's lit or not, and I wear a big hat. And you hear these guys yelling, "Oh, senor, senor, Cubano, Cubano, come here." Then I go over to them, I go, "Yeah, what can I do for you?" They go, "Oh, you're an American." Oh,
wow.
Never mind. All right. So the thing is, no, I don't worry about that stuff. Are you kidding?
Okay, no, everybody's got their vice, as it were. But let's talk about a virtue. Let's talk about a blessing thing. Let me ask, how... last question for Ian Finkel here in the neighborhood. How Jewish and religious were you raised, and how Jewish religious are you now?
Well, I was raised, as I suppose most good Brooklyn Jewish boys. I was bar mitzvahed, of course. course. You know, and my parents were always kosher at home.
Uh-huh, okay. Not Orthodox, but conservadox almost, kind of.
Well, they come from, you know, I think my great-grandfather was shamus in the shul and everything. Yeah, now, well, after a long life, thank goodness, I suppose, I'm not, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in it, not to get into that. This is not a topic I really discuss. Each to his own.
Okay.
I don't discuss in, be it anywhere. I'm an entertainer. My first job is to make people laugh, or enjoy, or think, or whatever.
Well, you have made us laugh and enjoy and think and whatever here in the neighborhood. I want to thank you ever so much, Ian Finkel, for being with us.
Thank you for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a joy. Shalom to you and success.
All right, and all the best to you, too.
Shalom.